The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
This week's Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Casper Premium Mattresses, and you listeners can go to caspertrial.com/lasertime and get $50 towards any new mattress.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, coming to you live from Pennsylvania. I'm your host, proud Wayne computer user Bob Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
I'm Henry Gilbert, and this chair be high, says I.
It's not that high. And who else is here?
Super happy, Chris Antista.
Awesome. And today's episode is Treehouse of Horror 4.
Foolish Earthlings. Frightened of a creature that does not exist.
Oh, burn them right at the top.
And this episode aired on October 28th, 1993. What happened on this day in mythical history, Chris?
This week, Howard Stern's Private Parts is tearing up the bestseller list. Hey, guess what? Aladdin might be at the top of the video charts, but Children's Video Chart has not one, not two, but three Ren and Stimpy collections. Whoa. On the charts. Stupidest Stories, Stinkiest Stories, and The Classics.
And I bet you got three whole episodes per VHS tape.
Exactly.
Those are 50 minutes of entertainment.
But if they were in orange plastic, then that's good.
Oh, yeah.
I actually have one I can show you right after we're done. Ooh, and NBC decides to ditch its long-running Friday Night Videos in the face of MTV and their unwavering commitment to playing music videos.
Wow, it took that long?
It did. Just because there's nowhere else to do it, I got a little clip of a host from that show that animation nerds will recognize. Friday Night Videos was Dick Ebersole produced. He produced SNL, but like the Friday Night Companion 90 Minutes sketch and mostly music videos. This was the host for the 1991 period.
Music news. The Milli Vanilli scandal continues to clog up the court system. In response to lawsuits from betrayed Milli Vanilli fans, yeah, I know, I've never actually met one either, Arista Records offered a $1 to $3 discount on a future Arista purchase.
Tom Kinney, Mr. Show and SpongeBob SquarePants fame, reporting on the Milli Vanilli scandal.
He's in his Elvis Costello cosplay.
Indeed.
This was a stand-up comedy era. He was a stand-up comic for a while. Yeah. And
Tomcat and Bobcat.
That's
right. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Way back in the 80s, and he would be on The Edge, of course, David Merkin Show.
We talked about him and Jill Talley being on The David Merkin Show. And now it's time for part five of our biography of David Merkin. So I kid because a couple people had nice comments, but they were still constructive, but saying, like, we talked a lot about David Merkin.
My excuse is
college.
My excuse is these things are in my brain and they have to get out or I'll go crazy.
Yes, we tricked you.
You want me to go crazy?
We tricked all of you. This is nothing but therapy.
Yes. We need to have some kind of productive use for these useless facts.
I don't even think it's much of a secret anymore that this is just like recorded therapy through the Simpsons.
We're all laying down on couches. But okay, there's so much to say about this episode. But first off, I want to say this is the best animated Simpsons episode ever.
Yeah.
Yep.
The show will never look this good. I don't know what happened outside of David Silverman to make it look this good, but there is, every time I watch it, I pull away different frames, different poses. I see something different every time. It's just a beautiful episode.
This was my alternate intro clip, and it visually emphasizes how great the animation is.
Oh, God.
They're dogs, and they're playing poker!
There are like 80 drawings of Homer you've never seen before or since in that one sequence.
And I think it is because, you know, Silverman and his team are just going real, they were going ham on it. And they, like, that one especially is so, that's like 18 David Silverman poses in a row. You can spot them every once in a while in certain episodes, but in that one, it's just like, I think he did every pose.
He's really all over this.
And though that scene was like, since, let's just talk about that right now, like that scene felt like practice for the Homer shinning freak out that he'll do later. Like, you'll see a little bit of the shinning freak out there, except none of the Homer.
I mean, making silly faces is something they've done on Tracy Ullman a lot, you know, like having a face making contest. So you see a lot of those weird poses and weird faces in these episodes.
Mm-hmm. It goes between Jim Reardon and David Silverman as my favorite Simpsons director, but this really shows that, like, when Silverman is on his A game, he is the best.
Yeah,
like,
and
he is the greatest.
And I would hate to work on the staff at this time because, like, I love Mark Kirkland's episode, but immediately going from this to just a standard episode, it's like, wow, such a difference, such a huge difference.
Yeah, when you even see Rosebud was great and it had really good animation, but it feels like very buttoned down compared to this one.
Yeah.
And I think Silverman, too, this wasn't the first one, but remember in the first, I believe it was the first two of the Treehouse of Horrors, that it was a different director each time, but this time the director controlled the whole thing, so he got to be hyper invested in all of it, and I think it got, like, he got to be so creative with, so him and his team got to be so creative with the posing, with the character designs, with placement, with what they recreated, and like, so much.
We see lots of things we hardly ever see, like camera movements within animation, not panning a camera on top of a cell, but actually moving the camera within the animation, like actually moving the entire background, animating
it's
the movements.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's incredible. Especially, I think it's front, every segment is animated well, but it's the first one that's done the best.
Oh, for sure. And,
but before we started, I wanted to get an intro from a special friend introducing us to this.
Oh.
So here was the thing I found. But when my search for Jimmy Kimmel promos for The Simpsons this time, which I still couldn't find, I did find a set of promos for it that, once I found this, I completely remembered it because I actually taped this as it was on. Mm-hmm. The night they aired it, it was part of a block of, they showed the previous three Halloween specials and then end with Halloween Special 4. It was the night of it, hosted from Halloween Horror Nights in Universal.
Wow.
And so a certain actor, who is one of my favorites of all time, got to intro the actual episode.
I just photoshopped him.
While he talks up his new show.
And now, back to the Fox Halloween Bash.
Hi, folks. I'm Bruce Campbell from the Adventures of Briscoe County, Jr. Don't go away because there's 2 full hours of Simpsons coming up.
You're at Universal Studios, Florida. You don't mind if I jump in here?
No, please. Jump right in. And then jump right out.
So that guy who played Beetlejuice, that was his only time he will ever be on TV again.
I've said one of the greatest moments in my life was going to Universal, not knowing what to expect, being pissed it wasn't Disneyland, and the Ecto-1 screamed by, with Beetlejuice sticking out of the sunroof with proton packs pointed at his head. And, I'm sorry. I'm like, this is the greatest place I've ever been.
Is that a Universal property, Ghostbusters?
No, but like they licensed a shitload of other characters.
And I have heard this from other from people too, that like cast at Universal, I think, is given a little more looseness and leeway than the very strict rules of what a princess or Mickey can do.
They just started allowing mustaches.
Wow.
Seriously.
Wow. After, at Disney World? Or Disneyland?
That you were not allowed to have a mustache, as decreed by Walt Disney in 1955, and they kept to it until like 5 years ago.
But Briscoe County Jr. was such a good show. It was really, really underrated that it was. And it was the first thing I saw Bruce Campbell in, because I didn't see Evil Dead when I was 11.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't seen it then.
I had an Adventures. I never saw the show, but I had a full-size poster in my room that I got at the Leon County Fair, which I think immediately is like, oh, I never want to work in marketing.
It's a silly title, The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., but it's intentionally silly. It's an intentionally campy show that starring Bruce Campbell as Briscoe County Jr., who is a super awesome, like, he's an Indiana Jones type, but in the Old West, and he's going on Old West adventures, but there are aliens and time travel hinted at. Like, there's
I never watched it.
In the first episode, there is a hint of, oh, this looks like kind of a spaceship, isn't it? Or we got this special thing here. So there's little bits of that in there. And it's a lot of intrigue that they actually tell pretty well for a full season. They actually got 22 episodes, which for a Fox one season, it's more than Firefly got. Yep. Like, it got the back nine.
Yeah.
It's sad that it didn't get a sequel. He also had his the backup star in it was the man who played Shonuff in
The Last Dragon.
And he's so great at it. He's Lord.
He's got the glow.
His name's Lord something. I do forget. It's been a while. But it was a good show. It was, of all the shows that were put on after X-Files on Friday nights, it was the best. It was better than Mantis. It was better than Strange.
Better
Hulk.
Than Mantis.
It was better.
Get out of here.
The Kung Fu, the legend continues. I have to jump in because if we have to keep talking about shows that aren't The Simpsons, I want to get this out of the way immediately. This episode's strung together with a... You see, Bart... I never knew what this was until the last few years. Yeah. That is from the show Night Gallery, not as fondly remembered. Great theme song, though. Yeah, that's nice and scary. It sounds very Hitchcockian.
They got to work with color, not bad.
So this is Rod Serling's Night Gallery that ran on NBC from 1969 to 1973. Mm-hmm. And it's important to talk about because almost every single Treehouse of Horror will be a Twilight Zone reference.
Yeah.
And Twilight Zone is a beautiful show. Night Gallery, not so much. But
no.
Here's a clip. Here's a clip from the very first, I think this is the very first, Rod Serling intro of Night Gallery.
If you seem to sense an aura of cool dampness that permeates this room, attribute it not to either defective air conditioning or inclement indoor weather. It's simply because this is rather a special place. With special statuary and special paintings, and they carry with them a coldness that seems to go best in a crypt or in a place like this, called the Night Gallery.
Yeah,
not the Twilight Zone,
yeah. And not in black and white. And that episode, one of the last acting appearances from Joan Crawford, and directed by a young Steven Spielberg.
That's right.
I forgot about that.
The Night Gallery is. It's just crazy. So Twilight Zone, we've talked about a billion.
Oh, for sure.
Twilight
on the show,
Zone's
it's amazing.
The greatest thing ever.
Rod Serling finished the show. It was canceled, and he sold like this is over. CBS wants to buy the right backs, and I say fine. And he sold the right Twilight Zone.
Wow,
that's one of the most longest running syndicated shows. Rod Serling just threw that away.
Terrible
so
investment. There.
4 years later, like I guess I better do this again. And he created Night Gallery, which is a 1 hour color anthology show.
Right,
and it's just, I thought they were decades apart, not less than 5 years.
Well, within five, well, because he'll be dead in 73.
Yeah,
so 69 to 73.
Yeah, in this show, he doesn't constantly smoke. But the Twilight Zone, I just can you believe? Have you seen an episode of Night Gallery?
I've only seen it in the past year, because these were never syndicated around me. They were never on Nick at Night or TV Land. But I think
they're all on Hulu.
Oh, they're on Hulu now.
They are.
Okay, yeah, I recommend.
But it's great because the Twilight Zone is, to me, is perfect. And I think mainly
it's the greatest thing ever
because it's shot on film. And it's been restored. It's up-resed. I watched an episode.
Beautiful.
And by being an anthology, they could get great actors for 1 week.
It's in black and white. It just has a dreamlike quality that's really good. Night Gallery is this soft, every man has a perm.
Gauzy 70s
Everyone's drowning in lapels. Yeah. It's like, and it's 5 years after the fact. And I cannot make that connection.
I recommend if you want to watch Night Gallery, look up an EV Club article, what are the 10 best episodes. Mm-hmm. But really, I think this was chosen for the wraparound segments because this is the show the writers grew up with. Not the Twilight Zone. They were too young for the Twilight Zone, but they were kids when Night Gallery was on TV.
And they were more attached to Night Gallery. And I also just have to think about the situation where Night Gallery came out of, like, this was easily the best dorky thing you could watch. If you were a Dana Gould type, when Dana Gould, I just think of Dana Gould with this stuff, but when he talks about his childhood of like, I read all the monster magazines and I was waiting for each, what was better than Night Gallery that you'd see on the three channels that you had?
Maybe $6 Man was a ways away, Incredible Hulk.
And it was all horror focused, so I feel like just how unsolved mysteries haunted us as children, this is what haunted the writers of The Simpsons, these scary stories.
Yeah. And they're fun. They're just like so not Twilight Zone.
But Night Gallery is an easy way of like, I'm going to show you this thing. And then I'll tell, I mean, even that.
And now a comedy sketch.
It is so funny that the closest thing we had to it in our youth was the Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street shows that were like
Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, okay. Tales from the Crypt was the
which
best,
I've been watching again. We put it on LaserTime TV. It holds up really well.
Yeah.
It is so outlandish and a lot like the Twilight Zone.
Okay, and it's why it's better is that it was made for HBO with real money and they actually got real directors to make things. Well, meanwhile, the Freddy show was just, And we filmed stuff. Like, Freddie was lucky to get...
Grandmaster Freddie.
Freddie was ready, lucky to get Brad Pitt in one episode.
Wasn't it called Wes Craven's Nightmare Cafe?
No.
I was thinking of something else. Okay,
this,
because
I know... This was Freddie Krueger's nightmare.
Okay.
Like, and they got one episode where he actually was in the full episode.
Yeah, where he's not like the wraparound piece.
It's like, well, this thing is about a spooky hotel. Yeah, I'll see you later. I can't say bitch on TV.
Dave, we were reminiscing about it on Laser Time, and David, like, yeah, I remember this episode about this old man who gets a young body. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, this is pretty good. I wonder who directed it. And it's just like, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger directed this episode.
Yeah, and that old man was William Hickey.
Yeah.
The Blessing.
Yeah, that guy. The show is, the first episode is a guy who works on death row talking to camera the whole time, who eventually ends up on... It's like so experimental. Why are we talking about other shows?
All right, but so Bart does the Night
Gallery.
Bart does the Night Gallery intro, which is a great wraparound for... They kind of just give up on those next season, like, see, which is fine, like, because something they talk about heavily on the commentaries, and we know this because we've seen the deleted scenes on the 138th episode Spectacular, is that... They have no time to tell a story. They have to cut good stuff. So if you get rid of the 2 minutes of Bart introducing things, or a party that they're at where they're telling scary stories, you get rid of that, you free up a lot more time for the actual parodies, which is what you're having fun with.
And in this intro, these wraparounds are only partially in-universe. I found it interesting. They work the Marge warning into these intros, but it's not her stepping onto a stage. And I mean, Bart is addressing the audience, but they're also in a museum. And Bart has to watch Maggie. Marge is leaving to buy earrings. It's kind of making a reality out of this framing device.
True, but Marge also says, don't watch this episode.
Yeah,
she's recognizing
it is strange.
In an episode. It's all very weird. And we talked about how College was Conan's last episode, but technically he wrote the wraparounds.
Right,
He wrote all the Night Gallery sequences. It's one of the craziest things this episode. I think it is... The most names ever on screen. It covers the entire thing.
It's still the green font, the bright green font. Okay.
Because it was shared. Each segment was written by a different person, and WGA rules mean they all have to be seen on screen at the same time. So when Ned is talking about the deal, it's just for about 1 second, full screen, just names.
Yeah. Like, and that's Flanders being revealed as the devil. How wonderful is that?
I'd sell my soul for a donut.
Well, that can be arranged.
Flanders! You're the devil?
It's always the one you least suspect. Now, many people offer to sell their souls without reflecting upon the grave ramifications.
Do you have a donut or not?
Coming up. Just sign here. Careful, hot pen.
Who's that goat-legged fellow? I like the cut of his jib.
Prince of Darkness, sir. He's your 11 o'clock.
They sneak Burns in there, even though it's so Burnsy at the end of the episode. Yeah. This is tied with The Shining as my favorite Simpsons Halloween segment ever. Like, this is... It's so gorgeous. It's so funny. It goes to so many great places. It's got Lionel Hutz. It has everything. Like, this is... I can't think of a better.
It's a perfect storm of Halloween. Yeah. Elements.
It's a very strong contender for the best one ever. The original King and Kodos one is so much fun.
It's a great early one,
and we'll get into it in a bit. My only problem with the episode now is that, like, I'm looking at it from, like, there's a lot of dated stuff in here. And the second one,
it violates canon, Chris.
it's not so much that it violates canon. It's just that, like, the second one is, like, is done so breathlessly and fast.
If
you don't have intimate knowledge of what they're talking about, this doesn't make sense and might not be funny.
You're expected to be a Simpsons fan watching this. Yeah. Like, and you know, Homer likes donuts. I like when Homer wakes up in front of the donuts. He is standing up asleep. And then, like, I didn't realize that until just now.
He tricks the devil. If Homer doesn't finish the donut, the devil doesn't get his soul, but then eventually wakes up in the middle of the night.
Well, his transformation of, like, I'm smart the devil. Yeah. That's so funny. Are we got it?
We got it.
Now, remember, the instant you finish it, I own your soul for...
Hey, wait. If I don't finish this last bite, you don't get my soul, do you?
Technically, no, but...
I'm smarter than the devil! I'm smarter than the devil!
You are not smarter than me! I'll see you in hell yet, Homer Simpson!
Not like
quickly.
So a great Fantasia reference, right, Chris?
Yeah, well, maybe. Chernabog?
No, it's intentionally Chernabog. Like, yeah. And then also when he sloops down, you see a little face of Flanders in there. Oh, really? You got to pause and see it. It's a little Flanders face as he goes there.
I love that the little dudes in hell, they look like Disney characters, like the demon characters from Hercules and Mike, like a two-eyed Mike Wazowski.
They're all emaciated, too.
Yeah. It's great. Well, you know, David Silverman did work on Monsters Incorporated.
Oh, that's right. Before we get too far, though, I want to mention this segment is called The Devil and Homer Simpson. It's a parody of The Devil and Daniel Webster, which is a 1937 short story about a farmer who sells his soul to the devil for a good season of crops. What do you call that?
A fruitful season of crops. That's Daniel Johnson.
And he gets helped by the fictional version of the famous lawyer Daniel Webster, who was a real person who died before 1937.
I didn't know that.
It's a good story. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna go deep in this episode. Yeah. That's what we're here for.
That donut had to be indestructible because I just thought as a kid watching, I was like, well, then you crumple up that donut and throw it away.
Yeah, or you
should have buried the donut.
You had it in your pocket, like.
But I could also see, this donut is the key to my soul. So I would, if it can't be destroyed, then I would keep it with me at all times to make sure nobody would like secretly feed it to me or something. So I get that.
Safe deposit box.
But then it is a great, like, easy joke of Homer just accidentally eating it.
I do.
And then lying to Marge.
But then he recognizes what it is.
Forbidden donut.
Well, well, finishing something?
All these sound effects.
The camera move there is the great, like,
it
the
sweeps
angle.
Through the kitchen.
Yeah,
and like they had to just draw that. Like, it wasn't a computer. Yeah. And then that angle on Marge's hair getting pulled into the portal. Mm. And then also when Homer gets stuck in it, the camera spins around.
Yeah.
Like,
I was thinking about when he falls into hell and just he's like twisting and the camera is turning and spinning. It's great.
It also reminded me of Roger Rabbit just because we just watched the opening together recently and the checkerboard floor and using that to show... To give you a better idea of spatial
awareness.
Yeah, if
you look at it frame by frame, it's showing Roger travel around a room, but someone had to draw like the most warped background ever to match the swishing movements of the camera. It's insane. I always call that piece like the culmination of 2D animation.
You have to emulate how the camera lens warps the image and everything. It's really interesting.
I wish like I would kill. I'm trying to imagine how much I'd pay for that original background because it has to look insane.
Well, it would fill your apartment. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be like 28 feet long.
Exactly.
Like, that's the thing with those pans on old.
Oh, I did not buy that Rosebud cell, by the way. No,
good follow.
Oh, I thought you were pointing at it. I was like, oh shit.
And then Homer goes to hell, and that is so amazing and filled with a reference. Mm-hmm. Well, first off, I think it was the first time as a kid that I found out hot dog meat is bad and you shouldn't eat it. I was like, but I eat hot dogs. Hot dogs are good.
This is so visual, but like, as a kid and an adult, this joke is, I don't know, it just this gag is awesome.
So you like donuts, eh?
Uh-huh.
Well, have all the donuts in the world!
Passage of time fading here.
More.
I don't understand it. James Coco went mad in 15 minutes.
Oh, fuck. I meant to look up
who I know who James Coco. Yeah. I looked it up.
The thing is, I think they wanted to make a Marlon Brando joke here, but they were like, oh, fuck, he's not dead. Who else was fat and dead?
So James Coco was a portly character actor of the 70s who... He was in tons of stuff no listener has probably seen. He is in Muppets Take Manhattan. Mm. But the thing I know him best for is in the film version of Man of La Mancha, the Don Quixote musical, he plays Pancha, the little fat guy who falls around with him on a donkey. He's really fun. I'm his squire. I'm his friend. He died in 1987, and so he would have definitely been in hell. But I think that's a little mean to be like, well, oh, this real person who's dead. He was also fat, and he's in hell.
I think it was either Family Guy or American Dad that implied Jim Henson was in hell, and they didn't explain why.
I think you're right. So that's who James Coco is. But that reference there, I love that. I use that to talk about when I did it recently. When Nintendo announced 18 new Fire Emblem games,
yes.
And I use that as a gif of just like, You like Fire Emblem games, huh? I have them all in the world. I was like, more Fire Emblem
with
games.
The memification of The Simpsons, I've seen that a lot as, like, we're getting too much of a good thing, kind of.
But it's
a great shorthand for that.
But everyone is Homer now who just goes like, no, I will eat. I'll eat until I die. Like, I can't stop it. But
and yet, in the previous episode, he could not eat all that cheese without going blind.
That's true.
Maybe it's just...
Hey, is that a continuity?
Yeah, I agree.
But this is...
Well, but that reference, though, is from a very specific thing. I actually have a clip of it. So they mentioned it on the commentary, but I'd never looked it up until now. A 1937 Warner cartoon called Pigs is Pigs, which, if you don't know the history of Warner Animation, before Bugs and Daffy and Porky...
Porky was big.
Yeah, but this isn't Porky. These are just pigs. This is... This is back when they were like, let's just do what Disney does.
Well, just the rip off. The whole Warner phenomenon is based on, like, we own a bunch of music. Make cartoons that use the music.
But this is just a ripoff of, like, if you told me this was a poorly animated Disney one from 37, I'd be like, okay, sure, because it is a bunch of moralizing.
It stars Piggy the Pig.
Yeah, and it's...
a Friz Freleng creation.
Yes, and it stars Piggy the Pig, and it's just a lame moral story or fable of just, like, this pig likes to eat too much, and he steals everybody's food at dinner time, and he'll have a nightmare that tells him not to, and it's just a dumb thing for kids, but
it really is torture porn.
And then it turns into torture porn. So when you see this bit here,
oh, that's the guy from the Disney cartoon.
Pigs and pigs,
they steal it though. This is, again, they just stole the design of the doctor from Disney. This is Pigs is Pigs, 1937. There's also a Disney one from the 50s called Pigs is Pigs, but that was one of those weird ones that, like, the government paid us to teach people about economics, so we made this. It's not good.
I've watched everything. I've watched so many Disney cartoons about how to rivet a Panzer tank. Anyway.
So, you love food, hey?
That was...
He's being fed lots of horse food, but it's
the same apparatus. It's, like, it's holding his nose.
Him saying, like, so you love donuts, huh? It's meant to be the same way that guy says it.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah, as a kid, I thought it was just based on the... I was terrified by the cartoons that sent Pluto and Sylvester to hell. Like, those
were dreams, Henry.
Those scared the hell out of me as a kid, as they were intended to. They were meant to terrify children into being good. That was a trick. But but also, same with All Dogs. All Dogs Go to Heaven, when they go to hell in that. Like, that terrified me.
I don't know who greenlit that fucking movie to begin with. When they're in the real world, why is every animal smoking?
Don Bluth just got to do what he wanted to.
Yeah, he's a maverick.
But this is one of those things that I love this joke, but it's so dated by the way it stops itself. We get introduced to the Jury of the Damned after Lionel Hutz comes in to represent Homer.
As a kid, I went so crazy. Like, Lionel Hutz is here. What a great gift.
He was in a bar watching Matlock with the sound off, so we can assume he fell off the wagon.
Hear ye, the Court of Infernal Affairs is now in session.
Very well. But first, some ground rules. Number one, we get bathroom breaks every half hour.
Agreed. Number two, the jury will be chosen by me.
Agreed. No, wait.
Silence! I give you the Jury of the Damned. Benedict Arnold, Lizzie Borden, Richard Nixon.
But I'm not dead yet. In fact, I just wrote an article for Redbook.
Hey, listen, I did a favor for you.
Yes, Master.
John Wilkes Booth, Blackbeard the Pirate, John Dillinger, and the starting line of the 1976 Philadelphia Flyers.
So Bart, Lisa, and Marge are afraid of the Flyers.
That's the only one I react to. And
that's great.
I'm not a sports guy, but I remember asking Diana, who grew up in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, they were pretty notorious. Like, have you seen the movie Slapshot, where, like, there's, like, three guys who all they do is rough people up? They don't score goals.
The goons, right?
David Merkin.
Goon, great movie.
David Merkin is from Philadelphia, and I think that was his joke.
Philly teams are famously violent, though I'll say Oakland teams are also known for that. But the stories they tell of fans at Philly games, like, threw batteries at Santa Claus when he came out of the game. That story they tell.
Battery day?
I think they just brought stuff to throw at him. And the other story I read specifically about the 76 Flyers, who were They won the Stanley Cup in 74 and 75, I believe. Don't correct me, Sportos, but that's what I think.
Sportos.
But in 76, they didn't win it, but they got close. But they were a championship team. But they also, like, they would fight their fans on it. And in 76, they almost caused an international incident where they played against the Soviet team. They were like the Soviet, which, if you know the story of the miracle on the ice, it was because the Soviets were so dominant in hockey. Nobody beats them. So they had a game of the Philadelphia Flyers versus the Red team. And in the game, one of the Flyers checks a Russian player so violently that the guy is like just down on the ice for a minute. And the Russians leave the ice and they're like, we're not playing anymore. Like, this is, you were too violent.
You Americans fight dirty.
And it was said that the Flyers insisted, like, if you don't could finish this game against us, we will not pay you any of the money we said we would for coming to do this exhibition.
Bums me out. As much as I love cartoons, I love animation, mostly because it's timeless. You can enjoy it in any way you want. Any generation can enjoy many episodes of Simpsons, especially Treehouse of Horror. But that Richard Nixon joke is awesome, but just like, I'm not dead yet. He would be dead in months.
Yeah,
months.
In April of 94, he would be dead.
Yes. And like I said with the other times.
Red Book, not dead, still around.
Nope.
He can still write an article.
I want to know what Nixon's Red Book article was. Because Red Book, we should say, is a women's magazine.
Kind of a woman from 1903.
Wow.
It's been around a while.
I mean, it was
And made the audio for Sega CD.
It was just crazy. Yeah. It was crazy that Nixon just got to keep going around like, yeah, that was a criminal, but I'm just hanging around. I mean, that was
not illegal if the president does it.
Yeah, Ford said it was okay.
I mean, that will just tell you that if you're hoping for somebody to be impeached now or like go to jail, nothing will happen. Like,
will
never happen to either side of it. Nothing will happen with
Nixon's
them,
crimes were small potatoes compared to other presidents.
By the way, watch Small Potatoes to see why
good
Donald
choice of
Trump
words.
Is horrible. But, the Nixon joke and him saying, yes, Pastor. Oh, something just hit me just now hearing that story, that clip. When Hutz is asking for bathroom breaks every 30 minutes, it's to do coke, isn't it? Like, I think it is. I think it is.
Maybe.
He did say that's pretty frequent.
That is a little too frequent for a trial.
I never thought about it until now. Like, the only people I would think of were like, I got to go to the bathroom again. Yeah, you're doing cocaine.
I mean, in the next episode, he's in really bad shape.
Lowest point in the next episode. Though, that's my theory. He's doing cocaine there.
Mm. I buy it.
But the verdict is in.
'Tis some kind of treasure map.
You idiot, you can't read.
Aye, 'tis true. My debauchery was my way of compensating.
Dear Marge, you have given me your hand in marriage. All I can give you in return is my soul, which I pledge to you forever.
We've heard enough. Your Honor, we find that Homer Simpson's soul is legally the property of Marge Simpson and not of the devil.
No.
No. So, yeah, they violated continuity. It's out of universe.
It bothered me. It bothered me now.
They got married at Shotgun Pete's wedding chapel. They couldn't afford a wedding cake.
Across the state line.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they are drawn to look like they did in that episode, but they didn't have a wedding cake for Homer to eat. They definitely didn't go to the hospital, and they didn't know, and Reverend Lovejoy did not marry them. But again, it's out of continuity.
We're in the goofy zone. It's fine.
Fine. Guys, but that's the...
You know, hell is like in their living room.
Yeah,
right.
That's, well, there's nothing to say there never isn't hell in the Simpsons world. Though I guess also it disrupts the continuity that the devil, we've seen the devil before, and it's not Ned, but I think they would...
Harry Shearer, it's fine.
It's still Harry Shearer.
It's devil.
None of these writers were around on season 3 when they wrote that episode, I think that could be why like they didn't think about it. But
it's still good casting within the Simpsons universe. And
Ned is the devil, is the perfect devil. I love it.
And Homer gets cursed to have a donut head for the rest of his life.
So the only thing I will say that I think, why I think this is worse than The Shining, why I would put Shining above it, but it's still tied for me, is that this ending isn't as good as The Shining. It's just like, it's kind of a cop-out. Marge promised her soul, and now it's over. And a funny visual of his donut head. The end. While meanwhile, just the shot of the Simpsons all frozen together.
Screaming with their mouths clamped shut. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
I also like the Sound of Thunder parody.
That is a really good one. That's in my top three.
One of my top three we will talk about in just a few seconds.
The Simpsons will be right back. Thank you, folks, for listening. I hope you're not too scared. And if you are, I hope you're taking it lying down. And if you're lying down, I hope you're doing it on a Casper premium mattress. I can cut that out now, right? Okay, thank you, Casper. Yes, Casper Mattresses bringing you this show today, and we are letting you listeners know you can go to CasperTrial.com/LaserTime and get $50 towards any new mattress. What is mattress? What is Casper Mattresses? I'm glad you asked. Casper Mattresses combine high-density memory and premium latex foam to create a sleep surface that contours to your body and keeps you cool and balanced throughout the night. Essentially, what that means is that Casper has researched all manner of sleep surfaces and, thanks to the science of sleep, has managed to bring you a better mattress at a much better price. Go to a big box store, you're going to find mattresses in the thousands of dollars, but Casper mattresses start at just $500. That's true. From twin to California king, Casper's got any mattress size that you need at a much lower cost. And guess what? You don't have to take my word for it. Casper offers a risk-free 100-night trial. If after 100 nights, if you're not satisfied, let Casper know. They'll refund your money, send someone by to pick up the mattress at no cost to you. Once again, that's Casper Mattresses if you're looking for something better to sleep on. And you Talking Simpsons listeners can go to CasperTrial.com/LaserTime and get $50 towards any new mattress. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on Patreon.com/LaserTime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Zero Time Dilemma came out on 3DS, and I was trying to call around. Calling around to GameStop, it was always like, look, thanks for calling GameStop, where you... And I'm like, oh, right. There's like a 60-second preamble before I can engage with you, human. I no ill will towards the person who has to do it, because that's your job. And for all you know, I'm the district manager calling just to see if you did it. Just so you can go, you weren't nice enough. Oh, really? For $5.25 an hour, I wasn't nice enough?
You didn't mention all six of the add-on things per sale.
I worked at Suncoast, the movie outlet in the mall, and I'm like, I have never in my life at 20 years old had a job that I'm good at. I am really good at this job, and then every morning when I'd be chewed out, you didn't sell enough Sports Illustrated. No. I don't want to push that shit. I can literally sell any movie in this fucking store to anybody.
That kid,
I'm the Ricky Roma of Suncoast employees. And it didn't fucking matter how many DirecTV subscriptions.
That kid buying Dumber on VHS really needed a Sports Illustrated subscription. He's
pretty
just
good.
Wanted to buy Fair Game.
What a beautiful choice.
That's all I wanted.
What I hate about the GameStop.
Thank you, CarTrack. That's my favorite line from that movie.
I don't remember it at
all. They hack into CarTrack to find Cindy Crawford and the Russian terrorist. Ah, CarTrack. Thank you, CarTrack. Thanks, CarTrack. It's great. Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
Exhibit in our ghoulish gallery is entitled The School Bus. Oh, they must mean the ghoul bus.
Nope, says right there, school bus.
Well, there's nothing scarier than having to go to school.
I feel you, Bart. I have to do streams like almost every day.
Bart's laughter, that's an underrated animation.
Yeah, yeah. Like, little touches are great.
Yeah, him just embellishing that moment. Like,
not to harp on Night Gallery again, I never got the parody for a long time and just thought this was a beautiful sequence.
Yeah,
like a
still
great
beautiful.
Way to,
I recognized Bart as doing Rod Serling, but I was like, well, this is a weird way to do Twilight Zone in a gallery of
I thought
some
the
kind.
Same thing, like, what's with the paintings?
But the next parody is, I think, might be the most famous Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
So,
because of the movie, really.
Movie, yeah.
Yeah, it might be because of the movie. I think it probably is. And that it starred, it had the one of the biggest stars that Twilight Zone ever had.
Yeah.
I think Time Enough at Last, I'd put that up there. With
that's a good one. But there's no message. It's like, this guy's life got fucked over.
He's stuck in the town.
Yeah.
Because everybody's dead. Nuclear Holocaust happened. And he's the only one
Was he
left.
Being punished for wanting to read too much?
I'm getting chills by how much I love Twilight Zone. And William Shatner's in three episodes?
This was the best one.
This is based on Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. It aired in October of 63. It's still a great episode.
Written by Richard Matheson, author of I Am Legend.
I think based on one of his short stories. Mm-hmm.
Within weeks, John F. Kennedy will be dead.
Oh, God.
Wow. But that is one of their all-time best, that William Shatner's character has just gotten out of a mental hospital because he had a nervous breakdown on a plane, and he's trying to stay relaxed on this plane.
Yeah. So people already don't have a reason to believe him.
And also played by John Lithgow in the movie, which I only look at now and like, William Shatner's a bigger star than John Lithgow. Why didn't you just ask him to do it again?
He was a little puffy and not as energetic at this point.
He was too busy with TJ.
30 years ago.
I watched this last Halloween because it's still great. Mm-hmm. And so only three things date this in a hilarious way. Number one, everyone is dressed up to go on an airplane. It's like, we're in our fancy clothes. We're on an airplane. Number two, everyone is smoking.
Everyone is smoking. And I don't know if you got this one. The fucking plaid curtains the airplane.
Yeah,
I love it.
They're like kitchen curtains. And number three, to save the day, he takes a loaded gun off another passenger. A guy just sleeping with a loaded gun hanging from his belt.
So it was the domestic flight.
Yes. So those are the three things that I thought were hilarious about this episode, which is still really good.
That is one of the biggest holes in that logic of just like, well, this old sheriff fell asleep with a six shooter. Because the writer's like, he needs to have a gun. He has to have a gun for this ending. And so, he's a man on a plane who sees a gremlin on the wing and can't take it. And nobody else ever sees it.
But it's
going to crash the plane and he can't stop
it. And I forget when I watch it again and talk about it here. The costume is just hilarious.
Why the clip of it, too?
It is a bad bear costume. Like, with the ears taken off and a dumb mask.
I like
still looks
how
scary,
terrible it
but,
is.
But, like, the, people don't see him, but, like, I forgot how he, like, is dragged and hovers onto the wing.
Yeah.
It looks so cool.
It's weird
to this day.
Unearthly.
Yes.
You know, you just can't explain
it. When he's just looking at it out the window, and it's, like, getting pelted with rain. But
you only see it through a rain-soaked window.
I did get a little clip of it.
There's a man out there.
What?
Look, he's crawling on...
No one's there!
No one's on the plane!
I'm sorry. Must have been there.
I've watched some original Star Trek episodes. William Shatner is doing a way more William Shatner in this Twilight Zone piece.
That is some classic theater acting.
Well, he's being asked to go crazy. Then there's nothing to hold him back.
This is peak Shatner. This is on Netflix, will be forever. It's fucking been remastered in HD.
This looks
amazing.
Beautiful,
Really, the root of this the story is too of the shame of mental illness. Like he's like that's really the symbolic thing there, that he doesn't want to admit he's going crazy again. Or he's
but all the stories, all three stories, the Twilight Zone movie, in this in the same way, were like he was right.
And I feel like in the voiceover, Rod Serling says, soon he'll be proven right and happily, because there are manifestations in the real world of this thing to prove him true.
But
I think it's better if it's just like, only he knows it's true and you, the viewer.
And
but
it
I
will haunt him.
I think the executives were probably just like, that's too depressing.
I still have too many clips of this.
But did you know who directed that segment in the Twilight Zone movie?
A
very famous person who made a movie everybody loved in 2015.
George Miller.
That is correct.
George Miller.
So good.
If you've never seen reading about that movie, it was like Steven Spielberg wanted to do something, so we decided to make him happy. And so the Twilight Zone movie is insane.
Well, I mean, that's why animation came back in the early 90s.
But just because Steven Spielberg wanted it.
It was apparently
happen.
A nightmare. It was really hard on everybody.
It killed two people,
including two children. Everybody knew it wasn't going to make a lot of money. And it has a ton of recognizable stars in it. Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks kind of shell the
film. And Nancy Cartwright's in it.
And Nancy Cartwright is in it in the Joe Dante segment. That is another
Simpsons parody.
Yes, it's good that Bart did that.
It's the only difference in the John Lithgow one to the original one is that Dan Aykroyd is the guy driving the ambulance that takes him away. He's like, you remember that show, right? Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
But it's because Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks bring in the beginning. They bookend the film.
It was a great bookend, and there were funny bits. This, I think, might be one of the most referenced across all media of Twilight Zone episodes. There's been a million of them. There's a man on the wing. They especially got so much out of that on Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh,
the first season, they had an episode where John Lithgow's character Dick Solomon freaks out on a plane because he thinks he saw something. And I'm like, I get it. John Lithgow did it. And then when they had William Shatner on the show, they like meet him in an airport. And he said, they say, well, how was the flight? He's like, oh, it's terrible. I kept seeing something on the wing. And then John Lithgow says, that happened to me too.
Damn.
And they're both so theatrical. I love it.
Apparently I'm not supposed to hate the show as much as I do.
Third Rock.
Never watched it because it was on like, Counter to the Simpsons, I think, on Sunday nights.
And then, and it's so prevalent that there was just a very clever reference to it in Lego Batman, actually.
Oh, wow, really?
There's a gremlin on the wing. Guess what type of gremlin?
Is that fair to
Did
say?
They play the music? Did they play the music?
Yes.
I thought so.
Is that fair to say? Also, Joe Dante. that this might be the most recognized Twilight Zone piece.
I think so. I think so.
Right? I think so.
I think it's the most iconic. The wing on the plane, man on the wing on the plane,
And again, the original is really cool, and the movie version is really cool.
Yeah,
and this episode is really cool, but it moves so fast.
I mean, what I like is it all has to take place within a bus, so it's very creative with the use of space.
Yeah,
I really like how they pull that off.
It's really good on the ghoul bus. And the opening,
the ghoul bus.
Though, just so you know that this is the one written by Oakley and Weinstein, it opens with a very boring, a very humorously boring and specific joke of the Krusty cards.
Hey, Bart, look! Krusty trading cards! The long-awaited 8th series!
Krusty visits relatives in Annapolis, Maryland. Krusty poses for trading card photo.
He seems to be running a little low on ideas.
Well, at least you got the gum.
Ow! I cut my cheek!
That's one of the things I miss about how fast times be changing and all that, is that my dad and I had the same trading card experience.
That's true.
Shitty gum and trading cards.
The powder-covered gum that was inedible.
Well, allegedly, baseball cards were meant to sell gum.
Right.
Like, that's how it all got started.
And then it became a collector's
market. And by the time I'm, like, getting, like, fucking Batman and Beavis and Butthead Simpsons trading cards, there's still a fucking inedible stick of gum in it for no reason.
It's petrified in many pieces.
You know, I think they definitely were meant to be called that, because you remember it's in the Peanuts Christmas special where he's like, it's not on a bubblegum card.
A bubblegum card.
Lucy says Beethoven's not famous because he's never been on a bubblegum card.
Yeah. I just hope there's an equivalent now. In the digital age, I can't just be Skylanders. That's too expensive.
But I definitely had that, like, it's such great observation of buying trading cards, being disappointed with what's in there, trying to eat the gum, and also thinking that, like, oh, this fourth run of Marvel cards, they're really running out of ideas for these.
Because my favorite card that I can't even find the name of, let me know if you know what it is. It was dinosaurs, but they were also rad in 80s as shit. Jam, sunglasses, skateboards, but
I'm guessing
also
there are roughly 8 series like that out there.
But even Garbage Pail Kids, which I did love.
Those are great. Those were gum cards, too.
Yeah, they were gum cards, but they get to a point like, this isn't funny anymore.
And every car was actually a sticker at the same time, right? Yeah,
and a puzzle.
I wonder, too, if they came up with that joke or if they knew it was coming, because the next year is when the real Simpsons trading cards came out with a very similar layout to the look of Krusty poses for trading cards.
Yeah. Which, again, thank you to Caleb for sending us a bunch of those, as well as this amazing Franklin Mint Simpsons collector.
Only
plate.
He's going to go up in value. I mean, the first run
thank
of Simpsons trading
much.
Cards are just shit. They're like Tracy Ullman stills,
it's
and
very
they had nothing to work with.
But they knew kids would buy trading cards if they said they existed, so they printed the whatever
did.
Shit they could.
Okay, I have a real dumb reference I want to get out of the way because this sucks.
Let's do it.
Hello, Simpson. I'm riding the bus today because Mother hid my car keys to punish me for talking to a woman on the phone. She was right to do it.
Excuse me, Bart's a little upset this morning, so could everyone please be extra nice to him?
Hey, where's your diaper, baby?
Thank goodness he's drawn attention away from my shirt.
This is one of the things that made me want to do the show, because I've seen this episode so many times, and about 3 years ago, I'm just like, what the fuck is Wayne Computers?
They're
and
real.
It's very real.
They
and
were
it was
real.
It was like,
they
but I think
real.
It was like the nerdy of the nerds. That's who liked Wayne Computers, because they were kind of incompatible with everything.
It was the Linux of their time.
Yeah.
People would be like, I don't want IBM. I'm on Wang.
I'm on Wang.
Well, the other thing is that Wang was a gift to comedians.
Oh, for sure. For sure. The easiest joke to make.
I mean, that's how I knew. I already knew what Wang Computers was from Gallagher of just like, they know what they mean. The wang goes up and the wang goes down. Get it?
So other people's names.
This is terrible, but I wanted to give you a clip. This is what I remember it from. One of my favorite movies the world has never seen. And it is, in my opinion, the greatest, single greatest film trailer of all time. We've been fortunate enough to see the original film trailer, like, run in a projector in widescreen, because it doesn't exist online. For Electric Dreams, it's never been on DVD.
Interesting.
It's a movie about a guy who gets a computer that's voiced by Bud Cort, who eventually falls in love with his girlfriend. The computer falls in love with a man's girlfriend, and they have a fight. And it's all shot in San Francisco. It literally ends with a fucking music video. It's amazing. but the first second of the clip is always makes me laugh. Because this is a 1984 America discovering computers. What if computers can do bad stuff?
What's your preference? Apple, Pear, Wang?
Oh, listen, I don't know anything about computers.
Nobody does.
This is the biggest computer I could afford.
So it's one of three names given to, like, your options for computers in 1984.
Man, and just thinking, like, I need to have a computer. That's what I do love about horror films. Even if the films aren't that good, they take a snapshot of what we were afraid of then.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, that's why, you know, we can make fun of it, but the teen films of, like, the 2000s of, like, ooh, Swim Fan, a stalker, or
Fear.
Like,
Fear.com.
Fear.com. And then there was that one that was just all in a Google Hangout. Remember that one?
Smiley or something?
Yeah. So they've been doing those forever. And so that's what I like, that one shows you we were afraid. And same with Videodrome was like, what if our TV cable got us back? Like, same deal.
So I want to go back to the Skinner thing in that this is the first real reference to his uncomfortable relationship with his mother, where it was established in Bart the Lover, where Krabappel is saying, let's just say his mommy won't let him come out to play. Then we have the Psycho reference, and now we have this.
And when Lisa is doing the phone calls, it's like, what's that, mother? I'm too old for that sailor suit.
Yes.
That's specifically a Psycho reference.
But here it's like, it's more realistic. Even though it's a Halloween episode, this is more of what Skinner's mom would do to him.
Yeah.
And I think it just rolls on from there.
She was right to do it.
I love that fucking line so much.
She was right to do it.
And it's a great excuse. They have to have Skinner and Willie on the bus.
They find good ways to get them onto the bus. And Willie even uses his bridle that he got from killing his mule.
we went really quickly past it, but I did love the line, I hope this is sweat. Like, Bart peed his bed in fear. And that Homer is in it for, like, a teeny tiny bit of this segment, but it's so funny that he's like, oh, I just stole the stuff from the marina, and he just doesn't care that Bart's terrified.
And he shows up for one joke.
I
like that Hans Molman is blown up in a car in and out of continuity.
That comes to a gentle rest.
Yeah.
Niles, wake up. Quick, look out the window.
No way, Bart. If I lean over, I leave myself open to wedgies, wet willies, or even the dreaded Rear Admiral.
Otto, you gotta do something. There's a gremlin on the side of the bus.
AMC Gremlin.
No problemo, Bart, dude. I'll get rid of it.
No. Oh, no. I just made my last payment.
And then Otto is just happy to be like, oh, yeah, I'll kill this guy.
I'll kill this guy, yeah.
And then when Willie shows up, that's the most direct reference to the monster from the show. He's looking at Bart from the window the same way the gremlin is looking at Shatner in Twilight Zone. But the actual design of the gremlin is very good and specific. Like, it's
I like it.
It's like a sharp-fingered eight little monkey thing who just is tinkering with stuff.
He looks more like the movie version than the show version. So I wonder if that's what inspired them to do this.
But it's like a dose of the movie version, but also a dose of Joe Dante's Gremlins too, as well. Who are these little long limbed things that can get into everything and mess with
it? That's what they were, and I shouldn't go off on that any more than I have to. But
we do learn that Willie put 17 bullets into his mule. Yeah. That seems a little excessive.
Extreme.
Yeah, but where is his gun?
Like to think he had a real strong mule.
Yeah,
wouldn't go down.
And I just love the animation on Bart's face squished against the thing. Like, you get so much movement out of that. Well, you get a real feel of, like, that's his fleshy face squeaking across it.
Silverman said he based the facial expression of Bart on both Shatner and Lithgow in this scene. So in this segment, I mean.
And when you get that little Kang and Kodo shot, they've talked on other commentaries about how they forgot to put them in one, and I really think that was the retake because that had literally nothing to do with it. But I think
that's right. Yeah,
and also it could, since it was the first one in the Merkin era. I think it's possible they thought, we forgot Kang and Kodos. Mm-hmm. We should really have them in there. Retake. 30-second reshoot.
It was a good use of Kang and Kodos.
It was great, especially hearing him do the Charlie Callis.
Yeah. Is that Charles Nelson Reilly?
Oh, yeah, you're okay. Right. Charlie Callis more like... Vroom,
vroom. Too many annoying noises next to Jerry Lewis.
Whatever Tom Kenny does in the Mr. Show sketch of Please Don't Kill Me, that's Charlie Callis.
Love the Joy.
Oh, the...
You believe me, don't you? You're my friend who believes me. Sweet. Trustworthy Milhouse.
Actually, Bert, you're kind of creeping me out. I think I'm gonna go sit with that foreign exchange student.
Oh, guten Tag. Would you care for a bite of my fingers, Trouser Bar? I also have a bag of marzipan Joy.
So yeah, the introduction
ever.
Of Uter,
first ever.
Who would be murdered next year in the PTA disbands, and much later there's a joke with his parents sitting with Principal Skinner saying, "We just want answers."
That's right.
God bless the man who invented permission slips.
But just that great joke of, you can even say we ate Uter.
And he's in our stomachs right now.
No, that's too far. But that Uter is a much more reused character than you would think for such an easy joke. Like, you can see the creation of, like, well, we need a joke about a foreign exchange student. Mm-hmm. What is a safe foreign country for us to make fun of that will not, like... So they go with Germany of, like, no one cares if you make fun of Germany. Yep.
That's what happens when you do full of Holocaust. You're not allowed to complain.
When you try to conquer the world twice.
we can make fun of you for liking a candy. Salty candy.
Or shitting on each other.
Well, yes. All, everything. And now they're more free than we are. But anyway, but I just love Uter as a source of all the easy jokes they can make.
I love foreign candy jokes.
And yeah, they're just like, well, the marzipan joys. Meet iodine.
Would you like a lick of my flavor bar?
My flavor bar. Because foreign candy sucks.
Yeah, marzipan, yuck.
But I bet every country feels that way.
I mean, we're on a podcast, and I feel like every podcast started with eating weird candy from other countries.
I mean, one of my favorite things to do at Epcot is to buy foreign candies, but... my favorites of Germany was just like fancy Werther's, like extra fancy Werther's, like melted Werther's over a popcorn ball.
Mit Butterscotch.
Mit Butter. And I like
iodine.
It.
I don't even know what it means.
They, with iodine.
I gathered.
They had to use, they use Uter quite a lot because whenever they have a film in a scene in school and they need another kid there, he became a great kid you could count on for a quick joke.
We had on another podcast, we were having a debate that Bart's classroom has the same kind of students in it, and Nelson is almost never there.
He's there.
When he has a line.
I guess so.
But like when you see like a long shot of Bart's classroom, we were wondering if Nelson was in the same grade because he's a little bigger.
Yeah. I think that he was originally established to be older than Bart, but he works so well in that classroom. Yeah.
I mean, he's there when they need a joke, like, say, someone likes you, and then looks back to Milhouse.
Yes.
It's clearly they're in the same class, but that's not always. But also, that could just be Nelson doesn't go to class when he doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
So
I love this clip of Flanders. The gremlin falls off the bus only to be rescued
by
Flanders.
Well, I love how the bus is depressurized when the window breaks.
Yeah. Oh, also, when they grab Bart to tie him up, that's one of the most obvious ones. Like, that's the act break in one of the Twilight Zone thing of Bart, of him getting an arm put around his neck,
full
like,
Nelson.
Pulled him down! Like, so, but Bart succeeds. Mm-hmm. He gets a flare and stops the gremlin, though he's doing it so well that even with Willie and Skinner pulling on his legs, they can't get him in. And then Ned sees him, which is, they did so much Ned before, you'd almost think like another Ned joke, but it's so good.
It's great animation of Ned hitting the gremlin.
Yeah.
Oh, dear Lord! It's some sort of hideous monster. Oh, isn't that cute? He's trying to claw my eyes out. Oh, he's trying
trying to claw my eyes out.
I don't know. I love Shears Take.
And the gremlin looks worried.
Yes, yes. And it turns out, yes, like the Twilight Zone movie and TV show, Bart was right about the gremlin.
But it's a turn.
Look at the bus. I was right, I tell you. I was right.
Right or wrong, your behavior was still disruptive, young man. Perhaps spending the remainder of your life in a madhouse will teach you some manners.
Like how he calls it a madhouse.
And that's a great reveal on the ha-ha that Skinner leaves frame and then Nelson's right behind there for the ha-ha. It is
it's perfectly placed, yeah.
And I would say that the severed head of Ned is too far. Like, it's like, this is really too grisly.
Finally, Hobart.
Like,
I love
he
that.
Has veins hanging out of the bottom.
His
like,
spinal
like,
column is hanging out of his head, yeah.
It's like, this is too scary for
well,
kids.
Well, David Merkin,
like, is...
he says on the commentary a lot, he believes the Halloween episode should be scary, which and then, this is why in the next one, they turn inside out.
They turn inside out, like, it's blood everywhere in the next
one. No, it should leave, like, because what great Halloween specials in horror films did for me, even like the old Universal Frankenstein, which are so G-rated, is leave you with a horrific image that you can't forget.
Yes.
And I think that's what The Simpsons should do, and they usually do a good job of it. And I mean, moving into the next segment, this is the only thing I worry about is that there's Richard Nixon is alive with a Red Book reference, moving into a Twilight Zone reference, moving into a parody of
a
Francis Ford Coppola's.
Here's the thing, though. I think the only thing tied to this is how Burns looks.
Looks, yes.
And that is cool on its own. You don't need to have seen the movie to understand that. That was a very iconic portrayal of
and
Dracula.
It is one of the most beautiful pieces of garbage. I try and rewatch it once every year. It is gorgeous.
Winona Ryder's just trying, God bless her.
Keanu Reeves at Westminster Abbey.
I will go to Dracula.
It is so bad, outlandishly
really
bad, but beautiful.
So
Bram Stoker's Dracula, 92?
Yes, 92. Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes,
lots of
possessives.
And it's impressive. Like, I didn't realize until you pointed out, Chris, how impressive it is, all the things they did with practical effects in that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things they do with nice, good matting and like sunlight and sunsets.
I mean, that was Francis Ford Coppola's last watchable movie. I think the next one was Jack.
I think it was his last one with a budget.
Oh, yeah.
Like, with a real big budget.
Jack, yeah. And that the movie also made it sexed it up real good.
They did.
Because they're like, enough of this, enough of these references to sex or pretending the vampires are about sex. Like, everybody's just going to fuck. Like, these vampires who were going to suck.
But that was there
blood.
In the books.
Yeah, it was.
It was never able. Like, because the first Dracula movie is so terrible after the opening.
The Bela Lugosi one?
It is, dude. It takes place in a room after his introduction, and they just talk about, I might be a vampire. Ah, I don't like crosses. I'll get out of here. Thank you. No action. Camera
so
never
Nosferatu
moves.
Is better.
Yes.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
The original and Werner Herzog's Nosferatu remake is also amazing.
I haven't seen it.
With his greatest enemy as Nosferatu in it. It's just, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it was him doing a tribute to German cinema to make that film. It's one of Herzog's best, I'd say. Best non-docs.
And I say that, like, I love parts about the movie Dracula, and I still watch it almost every year. But it's, but this, like, if you want to watch a fun Dracula movie, Francis Ford Coppola is pretty fun. Mm.
And it's like I said, sexy good time. Mm-hmm. Like, and Gary Oldman does a really good job.
And that's, you're right. I guess it's the haircut and the joke about the haircut, and that's pretty much the only time. Because all
the
Dracula movies start
the
same way, like someone being invited to this castle.
Yeah,
and
the shadow is the reference too from the movie for sure.
And also sort of how they draw Smithers, but they barely do anything.
Yeah, I mean,
that.
But Renfield is Renfield. He's kind of just universal.
Renfield is already kind of Smithers, but it's usually the most interesting part in a Dracula movie. Unless you're Tom Waits in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
So they jump straight into the Dracula stuff
so
very quickly.
Let's let Brockman set it up.
We think we're dealing with a supernatural being. Wiggum. Most likely a mummy. Huh. As a precaution, I've ordered the Egyptian wing of the Springfield Museum destroyed. Nice work, Ed.
No, they're wrong. The creature they seek is the walking undead. Nosferatu, Das Vampir. A vampire.
These vampires are make-believe, just like elves, gremlins, and Eskimos.
In a completely unrelated story, Montgomery Burns has just closed a deal to buy the Springfield Blood Bank.
Precious blood.
And the it's weird that Homer says gremlins are real when we just saw the gremlin sketch. Like, yeah. It's a strange choice of words. And that's the only time Burns is in a normal outfit. Like, he's dressed as Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
In his old...
And Gary makeup. Oldman has a ton of outfits in that film.
Yeah, he does. Well, because he goes through multiple transformations. Yes. And it's kind of beautiful in a way. Like, they put so much effort into it. Mm-hmm. But at its core, it's just like, this just isn't good. It's not a good movie.
It is so terrible. The ending is even worse.
Oh, my God. But Anthony Hopkins is okay as Van Helsing. Yeah. I want Van Helsing to be a grumpy old man who's just like, I hate sex, I'll kill it. That's great. And then they go to Pennsylvania. So another knock on Pennsylvania.
Sure was nice of Mr. Burns to invite us for a midnight dinner at his country house in Pennsylvania.
There's something fishy about this whole setup.
Lisa, stop being so suspicious. Did everyone wash their necks like Mr. Burns asked?
Yes.
Sure did.
That Homer's filthy rag that he's carrying with him is so great.
His neck was like just caked in dirt and grime.
And then a great way of getting around the word bitch in the next scene.
Which is weird, because I said that in the first Halloween Treehouse of Horror. Simpsons was the first show I heard say bitch, but Bart said bitch in.
Yeah.
And then the trainer of dogs said son of a bitch, which is technically a true statement that a British person would say.
There's video of Jim Henson saying it on the Arsenio Hall show. It's really weird.
Ralph.
Son of a bitch. But I do love the doorbell gag.
Welcome. Come in. Fresh victims for my ever-growing army of the undead.
Sir, you have to let go of the button.
Oh, son of a bitch.
So Smithers as Renfield would not be as put together as he is in that little segment. He was just kind of like a staggering Igor kind of character afterwards.
Son of a... And then the door opens. It's really cute. And then Homer...
How do we feel about this joke?
It's less funny now.
Well, if it isn't my good friends, the...
Simpson, family master.
Simpson, eh? Excellent.
Dad, do you notice anything strange?
Yeah, his hairdo looks so queer.
I heard that!
He was a boy!
I'm not positive it's like
meaning gay.
Yeah.
Like I've heard that word used. They love old timey words.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think maybe, I don't know. It could
be
either way.
I'm pretty sure. I'm just not positive.
Homer,
if someone said that's not how they meant it, I would, I could see that.
Yeah. Same
I
here.
Could see
but
it.
Coming out of Homer, it's just like, I don't know. I think he is saying his hairdo looks gay. It
took him like,
if you're Homer thinking that, you'd be like, yeah, that does look gay.
Yeah.
It's funny to an extent of just Homer thinking, like, it's a dumb thing for Homer to say when Lisa's like, isn't he obviously a vampire? And Homer's just like, yeah, his hair's gay.
It's the least notable thing about the situation.
Yeah. And he's never had any of these assumptions with Burns and Smithers ever before.
No, never.
Just because the haircut.
And then, correction, free blood. I love that. Just Homer happily drinks blood, which... That can't taste good.
No. He knows it's blood. And Marge has no comment on any of this, I don't think.
No, Marge is pretty silent in a lot of this until the end. And then they find these...
Well, we know why Marge is quiet. She's the lead vampire.
That's true.
Yeah.
It doesn't really come together in the daytime. But then they find the crypt while looking for it. And I like the little line of... It's the same as the basement in Grandpa's old folks. Like, they just keep corpses there.
That's really fucked up.
Yeah, and some Three Stooges references.
Oh, my God! Please, Bart, I've seen your stupid shim. Yeah, I've seen your curly, too.
Yay.
It's beautiful, though. That's the one knock, the tiniest knock I'll give on the animation in this episode. The vampires he meets down there are too generic. They're just like,
very much like these Simpsons arcade game zombies.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
But,
they're just very bland.
Bart is undone by the super fun, happy slide.
It is. I don't know. Our group of friends adopted the super happy fun moniker to give things. This is the super happy fun McDonald's.
I prefer the Homer super fun happy slide.
And I like, though, how Bart goes from good acting on Nancy.
And I love how that Burns transforms from a bat into Burns and pounces on him with that great piece of animation.
So great animation. Yeah. And that Burns doesn't even know who Bart is. And that's great, too.
It is a little boy.
Boy. And I'm glad they cut away, because literally seeing Bart get bit by Burns would be like, this is too sexual of Burns and Bart. Like, I mean, in case you don't know, Vampirism is sex. It is a sexually transmitted disease. That's the symbolism Bram Stoker was going through from the beginning.
Yep.
So the idea of like, oh, then Burns fucked Bart. Like, that's the that's what has to happen in there. So they kind of have to cut around that as best they can because it's weird otherwise.
That's true.
It's
weird. I keep forgetting to give out line of the show.
Oh, we all do, I mean, but is this it?
I love Grandpa's line. I still think is the funniest take in the whole show.
That's the joke.
How many times have I told you not to bite your sister? Wait a minute! You are a vampire! Quick! We have to kill the boy!
How'd you know he's a vampire?
He's a vampire?
So I had to...
Homer, we gotta do something. Today he's drinking people's blood. Tomorrow he could be smoking.
The only way to get Bart back is to kill the head vampire, Mr. Burns!
Kill my boss? Do I dare live out the American dream?
That is the best line. You're right, Chris.
Yeah.
Both of these are amazing. Grandpa's running out of the room. I love that he leaves and lets go of the stake and it falls behind him.
And we don't know why he's there in the middle of the night.
Yes, to stab Bart in the chest.
The new great animation I pulled out of this, which I noticed before but really noticed this time, is you are a vampire! Just the extreme exaggeration.
You see Homer making a V shape with his bottom lip.
It's so good. And the squish on Bart's nose. And meanwhile, Lisa's like, duh, like I told you.
But just that like so that great. Exaggerated like pointing into his nose and the nose squishes in. It's so great. God, I love this episode and
just
this
animation. For that 30 seconds of and you get a free soda at the movies.
Oh, yeah.
That whole section, that's the Lost Boys.
Yes, like, and I think we get one of the last Twister Mouths. You get to drink blood.
I mean, it's usually your Halloween Twitter profile pic, isn't
it? Yes, every Halloween I have the Bart vampire with the twisty head.
It looks insane still.
Whenever I think of beer killing brain cells, I also think of, like, where are beds in TV?
I love this.
Mr. Burns is a vampire, and he has Bart!
Why, Bart is right here.
Hello, Mother. Hello, Father. I missed you during my uneventful absence.
Oh, Lisa, you and your story. Bart is a vampire. Beer kills brain cells. Now let's go back to that building thingy where our beds and TV is.
they're attacking beer. We learned on previous episode that they were told not to attack
That's
beer.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then when Homer says super fun happy slide when they go back to kill Burns, that was intentionally animated to look like Humphrey Bear,
That's
the
right.
underrated Disney star.
That was a Brad Bird edition, actually.
Yeah. That, Humphrey Bear when he gets excited, Humphrey Bear doesn't talk. He's all animation. He's like, put it in the bag. Put it in the bag. Bump, bump. Put it in the
fucking bag. Love Humphrey the Bear.
And so that him doing the R movements, that's how I think of like, I'm so happy. Woo.
Yeah.
And I had a good little laugh as a kid at the at this next clip.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is...
Take that, vile fiend!
Dad, that's his crotch.
Oh, sorry.
I also like that Burns didn't feel it.
No.
Work it took to wiggle it out like...
Oh, it's so gross. And that is the sound of wood, like... A wooden stake being removed from genitals.
The Foley is always so great, especially when you don't see the visuals, get to really focus on it. But Homer is fired after killing Mr. Burns.
You're fired!
Where's he gonna get money now?
And, of course, as a giant Peanuts fan...
Oh, I want to say one thing.
Please, please.
This only works on you once, really.
Yeah.
And it was the most amazing thing I'd seen on TV. Just, you can't do that!
That's an excellent point to
and
bring up.
Just completely blowing your... I mean, this is a prime David Merkin joke, I think. Just...
I'm like, I'm giving you this horrible ending. Nah, just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just goofing on you.
For a Christmas reference, because they don't do Christmas specials, which is dumb.
I mean, it's unsatisfying in terms of a story, but it is the greatest joke to just say, fuck you, fuck this whole story. Here's something you weren't even expecting.
And here's a Christmas joke on a Halloween show.
Yeah.
I'm a vampire, and I've come to suck your blood. This cape is giving me a rash.
He's flying.
Grandpa's a vampire?
We're all vampires.
But no, we killed Mr. Burns.
You have to kill the head vampire.
You're the head vampire?
No, I'm the head vampire. Mom? Well, I do have a life outside this house, you know.
Happy Halloween, everybody!
Oh,
snowing in the kitchen.
It's snowing in the kitchen. Santa's little helper is dancing like Snoopy, which is literally the only dance I'm capable of doing.
Milhouse playing the piano.
Yes.
I mean, you could end the episode with them about to attack Lisa and be like, the end, happy Halloween. But they, I think that too is the, it was the joke of them not wanting to leave you upset or scared or like, oh, the whole family murdered Lisa. That's a bit intense. So instead they're like, all right, we'll give you what you don't expect. And yeah, even then you would have still seen a lot of parodies of the Peanut special. Yeah. But as a kid, I always appreciated a reference I'd get.
Yeah, yeah.
Same here.
I got it then. And you're right, Bob. It worked. It may only work once, maybe twice for Forgetful Me.
Yeah.
When I don't see it coming. But
it's like endings like this and the Lester and Eliza one are just out of nowhere. And they're really, I really appreciate them, but they really only do work once because you know where it's leading if you've seen it before. But I mean, if you want to talk about this in the context of other Halloween specials, I feel like this is the best one so far. And I think we really did see the weaknesses in season four's special with all the added lines. There was none of that here outside of maybe like one joke I noticed, but it was more confident, I think.
Yeah,
overall.
Much more confident. The only one I can think of that was like that looked obviously ADR'd was the only monster on this bus is a lack of proper respect for the rules.
I think you're right about
which
that.
Which is still a funny line, but the mouth movements are definitely off.
But none of that distracting stuff, and they're all extremely strong stories, and they move super fast. And again, you'll never see another episode of The Simpsons that looks like this. This is the best looking episode that will ever be made in the history of the show.
Good.
Yeah.
No way. This was the best. Even by the next one, which is the next Halloween special, which is also amazingly animated.
It's also very good.
Even then, they've still, like, they lost 5% of their fluidness.
I think Matt Groening must have been mad about this.
I don't want to blame Matt Groening for everything, but he wants very staid animation. Like,
yeah, he does. I don't get him. He likes animation. I don't know why he likes it to be stiff and have these
maybe
weird
he's just
rules.
Thinking as a boss, like, that will be hard. Don't do what's going to be hard. And
maybe
give us hell.
But this is my favorite Halloween special they ever did. These three together are my all-time favorite. I mean,
The next one is so good.
One is Shinning, the time
travel. Four and five
travel.
Are tied. I can't decide between them.
Shinning, time travel, and eating the kids are all so good. Boy, it's tough.
Yeah.
But these are really good, too.
Life doesn't get better than a Treehouse of Horror episode. It really doesn't.
Especially at this time of the...
good old Ides of March. Yes. What a great time to watch the Halloween specials.
So, are we ready to wrap up? Or,
So,
thank you for listening, everybody. This has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Serbo. I also write every day from Fandom about video games. It's fandom.com. And I write a comedy article every other Thursday for somethingawful.com. My other podcast is Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast. Every Monday, a brand new episode about a topic you probably like. So go to retronauts.com and find an episode about a topic that you've heard of. And you should get into the show that way. Or just search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. That's every Monday on retronauts.com. Everybody else.
I mean, the Bart versus the Space Mutants episode is quite a good one to start with on Retronauts.
It's basically us in doing a Simpsons episode, but about a video game. So look into that one.
And I'm HENEREYG on Twitter. Follow me there for all my thoughts and subtweets. And also, you can read my work on fandom.com. And most importantly, patreon.com/lasertime. I still do stuff with Lasertime, this in particular. And this is only possible through your support on patreon.com/lasertime, where if you give there, it's not just that you keep getting this out, but you get a bunch of exclusives, hundreds of hours of exclusive content on there, including the entire first season of Talking Simpsons and our seasons 2, 3, and 4 wrap-ups. All great for as little as $5 a month, but all that you can give is always appreciated. Patreon.com/lasertime.
This show and many others are executive produced by Caleb and many others over at patreon.com/lasertime. I also want Caleb also gave us this amazing plate.
Too nice. Thank you so much.
And I wanted to thank, before I forget, because I forgot about the video, Jonathan Wilson in the Lasertime Facebook community group cut together Every Time I Yell Oh Boy Bobby.
Oh my gosh,
I listened to that 5 times.
I hate the sound of my own voice, and it's surprisingly addictive to listen to.
That's because it just keeps going dun dun dun
every
dun,
single
dun,
one in a
dun,
row.
Dun,
and
dun,
as
dun,
I find
dun.
A different way to curse, and it, I got to tell you, put enormous amount of pressure on me doing it this time
to go over the top every time.
Yeah,
God,
I don't know how I could top some.
Now
of
you're
those.
Two in your head.
Yeah,
and I want to thank him, and I want to say, listen to Laser Time. Go to LaserTimePodcast.com. Dave and I have been doing Simpsons races where he raced the first level of Bart's Nightmare and Bart vs. the Space Mutants on our YouTube channel, YouTube.com/LaserTime. And the next episode will be all about the worst raps of all time.
Ooh,
of
I
which
want this.
Bart Simpson participates.
Oh boy, yeah. Deep, Deep Trouble, or is there a worse one than that?
Worse than that.
Fucking Yellow Album bad, right?
Oh, is there a rap on that?
I don't know.
Oh, goodness.
There probably will be, though. But,
no, I think it's technically worse.
Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next time with Marge on the Lamb. See you then.